1 o'clock hour here on a Friday. Cody and Gold, thanks to everybody that came out to Community America Credit Union here at Olathe, 135th and Black Bob, for the Red Friday tailgate. Things have winding down now, but we had a great time. Chiefs cheerleaders, Casey Wolf, some folks won a couple pairs of tickets to Chiefs Monday Night Football on this coming Monday against the New Orleans Saints, and it was a good time hanging out with everybody, feeling good, not just about the Chiefs, as I said, but of course, we saw some Royals blue mixed in as well, more than ever, I would say, in the last couple of years, with this team on the verge of an American League Divisional Series game tomorrow night out in the Bronx, right here on 96.5 The Fan. And it's good to have Joel Goldberg from Bally joining us in person. This has been a heck of a ride for you this year, I'm sure, too, the roller coaster at times of a season.
Yeah, I've seen so much over the years. I'll first say that these guys may have predicted that this would happen. I'm probably, like most people, I didn't. And I think, like most optimists, I thought, if you could somehow get to 500, that'd be a heck of a season, in part because to ask for a 25-win improvement is pretty absurd. And they obviously upped that to another level. So, the ups and downs to me, I've done this long enough. I made the statement I was serious about it. I didn't realize how right I'd be. Right before their first seven-game losing streak, I said something on the air one night. I said, if you like roller coasters and worlds of fun, which I do not, you're not getting me on those.
He's
things.
Not a roller coaster guy either.
No, I get sick on that. Wife loves it, daughter loves it, me not so much. I said, if you like roller coasters, buckle up because you're in for a ride. Then they lost seven in a row. Then they won 7 of 10. Then I think they thought, well, at least we got that out of the way. Then there was another one. And I know people were really freaking out towards the end because I think it was the first time that we got it back in our heads that I think we all got comfortable finally realizing they're going.
Yeah, September 1st or so, I'm like, they're going to the playoffs. Look at the math.
And even after they survived the seven-game losing streak and came back with 7 of 10, more importantly, I think, to that, it really showed the resolve that they've had all year long, that every time they got knocked down, they came back. June was really the first time that they struggled. They only ended up, I think, a couple games under 500. They came back. They've shown that all year. That's what gives me hope every time that they're down. Ned Yost, Cody's old great friend, who said to me as soon as I saw him, how's Cody doing? He was as concerned about you as he was.
I should text Ned. It's been a few months since I texted him.
He's a much happier, friendlier Ned right now.
Retirement does people things.
But he said to me, I knew they would be totally fine. They have the right kind of guys to handle this. And that, when people sit there and wonder about certain guys on the roster, they have a roster full of guys that just know how to handle this. And as much as it probably drove people crazy, even me, of hearing, like, we're going to be fine, but you're losing again. But they didn't panic.
They put pressure on, like, if I go back now, because at the time you're like, everyone has to say that, right? Because you got to believe in yourself or no one will ever. But Vinny in, Royals Fan Fest in February said, no, we have real expectations for the first time, and we're taking that serious. And then around that June losing, I think, is when he told you guys, he's like, we're not just bouncing back. We're a good team.
Right.
It's not bouncing back. Yeah, we don't have resolve. We're a good baseball team. Vinny seems like even more so, like, at the forefront of, we've always been good, and we're not going to let you try to, like, give it a different saying, I guess.
I mean, in defense of everybody else, it's like, we've all watched a lot of sports for a lot of years, and everybody says they're going to bounce back.
Sure.
Every team in every sport, when people like me ask the, obvious and overdone question of, at what point in the dugout did you believe there was a chance to come back? It's one of my least favorite questions because name me someone that's going to say anything other than,
right,
we always believe on this team.
Yeah.
It just feels like maybe the discussion is less about belief and more of they have the DNA of a team that can handle that. Now, this becomes different if and when you get behind in a series. And they haven't had to play a lot of catch-up in the playoffs. Go back to 2014. I mean, they ran the table and went 8-0 to start the playoffs.
Four-game playoff winning streak,
That would be great. But let's just speak about this realistically. And they could still do that, but there's a very good chance that they're going to be, we fully expect they're going to be tested to the limit in New York. A place that, if I remember correctly, I don't think they've won a series there since 2014.
Oof.
Now,
a pretty good year.
Pretty good year. There was only one guy on the team that could talk about losing all these years and last winning there, and that's Salvador Perez. So some of those things are sort of silly to me because you think Tommy Pham knows how infrequently the Royals have won there, and on and on and on. That's the point. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to be – I don't want to sit there and say throw it all out the window, but I do think this is totally different. The Royals were dominated by the Yankees this year. If you look at the run differential, it's pretty significant.
The first series was really bad.
First series was really bad. But they played really well last month in the Bronx.
Agreed.
I don't think this group will be spooked or overwhelmed by anything that's going on in New York, and I will sit there, having just been there last month and over the years, it's fun being at Yankee Stadium. As much as I am, like many people here, anti-Yankees. And honestly, when the new stadium opened, I didn't like it at all. It was just this pretty palace. But I think over time, and especially for me after the pandemic where we were all locked up and not around people, you just know when you go to Yankee Stadium, there's a different vibe there. It might get louder indoors in Houston or certain other venues. There's just a different energy and vibe that completely represents New York, the grit of New York, the lights of New York, the stars of New York. There will be superstars sitting in the front row tonight. Who knows if it's Jimmy Fallon or if it's Jay-Z or it's whatever it is, on and on and on. I think this is a group that will embrace that opportunity. And then we'll just see how they match up. It's going to be really interesting.
Do you think nationally they'll pitch this as Bobby Witt Jr. versus Aaron Judge,
yes.
Aaron Judge versus Bobby Witt Jr.?
Yes, and they should.
They should. Oh, absolutely.
They should.
I mean, they should.
I think Cody might... I think I know where you're getting with this, or if not, I'll go there. Look, we always have, I think, I'm included, I've been here 17 years, we have a bit of an inferiority complex here in this town to the coverage that the big boys get.
Yeah, they treat us like a flyover city, right. And we don't like it.
Which, by the way, we don't like that we don't get national attention, and then when we're on national TV, we wonder why the announcers don't know as much as Ryan LaFever and Rex Hudler and all of our people. So that's a little bit of goes like, which side do you want? But back to the point and the question, I think in my mind, and maybe fans' minds, we may be sitting there thinking, does the rest of the country really know about Bobby Witt Jr.? And I think the answer at this point is yes. And the reason why I say that is that the last couple of months, especially of the season, all year long, but especially it was amplified the last couple of months, it dawned on me, because I just become used to this. Bobby Witt Jr. is a guy I see every single day. I know how good his talent is, but you get, I don't want to say you take it for granted.
You get numb to it a little bit.
But to see the way kids in other teams' jerseys and to see the way kids and fans from other cities were freaking out anytime he would walk out, it reminded me that we're not just dealing with a good Royals player, a great Royals player, a generational player. We're dealing with our version of a Mike Trout. We're dealing with our version of an Aaron Judge. Trout's a little bit easier to understand because the skill set's a little bit similar. But yes, I do believe that the rest of the country has figured that out. They haven't necessarily seen him because of the lack of national exposure. So I believe at this point that it will be billed as Judge versus Witt, and it should be.
No question, especially with the first two appearances in the postseason coming up with game-winning hits, ultimate game-winning hits for the Royals, and he's one of two players in baseball history to do that. We got Joel Goldberg hanging out with us here on Cody and Gold. You've been involved in a lot of champagne showers, so I just want to ask how that one, I guess it's been a week now, this point compared.
Sent the laundry down to the hotel that night, or it might have been a little bit after the night, if you know what I mean, and because I didn't want the stench of that in my bag,
okay,
or in the room for that matter, too, because there's no real getting rid of it. They're all fun. I mean, I suppose it will be. I thought when I looked over and saw Carlos Hernandez wearing like a chicken on his head, that could potentially be a bear suit, Joel.
Yeah, it wasn't though.
I don't try to create anything, but my brain first went to, I've got to get him and figure out what's going on here. And then he disappeared, and in a very kind of magical, organic moment, John Schreiber just turned a corner.
He was having a good time.
He was having a really good time.
Yeah.
Turned the corner and just invited himself into the interview. And that was one. And then I tried to wrap it up because in my ear, my producer saying, got to get to the field. They got J.J. Piccolo. All right, we got the GM on the field. He goes, I just want to say hi to my wife. I'm here. Let's go with a shout-out. So that was probably my favorite moment. Salvi at one point grabbing Tommy Pham and calling, you're the Caballo. You're the like, he was going crazy. And then I think my other favorite moment was in the middle of Vinny, of course. And Vinny catches himself from swearing. Was very proud of himself for that. I was proud of him, too. And then Tommy Pham walks over and calls him like that late, early morning, 1 a.m. girlfriend that keeps nagging you.
Yeah, he's texting him. Yeah.
How close was Sam Mellinger to Vinny? Because obviously during the entire interview, if you don't see it, he's like, there's Sam. I'm not going to say anything I shouldn't, even though he told us everything we needed to know just based on his happiness.
Yeah.
How close was Sam? Was he giving him a dirty look, trying to make sure that Vinny didn't say anything he shouldn't?
First off, I don't think that Sam was any closer than he would be any PR guy.
Right.
Now, obviously, he could have gone and stood next to anybody's interview. I set up basically all those interviews myself. I'm off camera. I just yell at a guy to come over, and thankfully being with them,
they all know you.
Yeah, it's easy. Like, sure, I'll go.
Nobody says no, and they're not going to say no to a lot of people anyway, but I always feel like all the years or even just this year of being around them puts me at an advantage, or at least a comfort level from all sides. So was Sam standing there to monitor Vinny? Or was he just standing there because he needed to stand there and watch somebody's interview? I don't know that it really matters other than whether he had intentions or didn't. Vinny was going to at least expose that a little bit in the way that only Vinny can do, right, and make it into a fun moment. But you could hear Sam cackling in the background and me cackling, and I don't know that I had any clue that Sam was – how far away was he? Maybe 3 feet off of my back pocket? I don't know.
I always like, Vinny is going to steal one of our jobs. So just, I guess, everyone prepare. Get your retirement in order because Vinny's coming for something we do.
I mean, I'm not saying that he's at New Heights level, but he's more that than us. So if he wants a national audience at some point, he'll get that.
Yeah.
And he'll get that if he has the career that we all think that he's going to have. The good news is Vinny's just getting started. Bobby's just getting started. Massey's just getting started. And so I think that's the exciting thing about this group, is that they have some true, legitimate superstars, and then Bobby's at another level, or emerging superstars. There's no reason why Vinny can't be. And then you have this really, really interesting, well-thought-out mix of veteran role players that just fit.
What do you make of Q throughout this season? This is year two for him, and I think a lot of people were still trying to get to know him this year even, and now there's a whole bunch of new Royals fans that maybe weren't on board 3 months ago that now everybody's bought in this city that they're back in the postseason and winning, and how he goes about his business. And in particular, I thought in the postseason, for those that are just now noticing him, I mean, it helps if the players execute, no doubt. But I thought it was a masterclass in terms of how he managed that bullpen the last couple of days.
No doubt. And I've said this since the beginning of time and will continue to say it. The best bullpen moves are the ones that work. And the worst ones are the ones that don't work. And so if Angel Serpa didn't come in and deliver, magically, by the way, I mean, we're talking about a guy that was in the minors a couple of years ago that was struggling. There's no way when he went down that I could have envisioned that he would be one of their choices to make the playoff roster.
It's or not to pitch in an important moment.
Even more so, yes. It's not that I couldn't believe it, but, I mean, they already have a bunch of lefties. They have Chris Bubich. We thought he'd be in high leverage, and he is. We weren't sure yet on Daniel Lynch, who suddenly to me looks like, I don't know, the 2024 version of like Andrew Miller out of the bullpen.
That's exactly who I think I referenced like 2 weeks ago, because that's how they're using him, like two innings at a time.
Yeah, I'm not the only one. You're not the only one. A lot of people have noticed that, even some within the organization before it happened. And so it was hard to see Serpa in the mix there, and now it's hard to see him not in the mix. And so, look, Q will make a decision at some point in the bullpen that backfires. I think the one thing that I've learned is I really try not to go down the rabbit hole of social media comments too much. I did that when I was younger. Sometimes I do it for fun to remind me of just how part of being a fan is being irrational, right? Like, I'm not working a whole lot right now with the way our contracts go, and so I'm allowing myself to be a little bit crazy and irrational to remember what it's like to be a fan that isn't working, to be able to enjoy this as a fan. But I still, within the last month, when they were losing their games, saw plenty of fire Q comments, which just made me laugh, because he's in the mix for manager of the year. I think Stephen Vogt will probably get it, but no one would argue with Matt Quatrero getting it. I think JJ will get the executive of the year. But here's what I think on Q. I haven't seen him change all year. There have been some moments where you could tell that maybe there's a little bit more, I don't want to say pressure, but maybe a little bit more intense than on an everyday basis. But he's kind of the same every day, which, can be a little bit challenging when you're asking questions. I feel like I'd have these preambles for 30 seconds doing everything I could in the setup of my question to steer him away from today. It is the best and worst slogan ever. It's the modern day version of take it one game at a time, take it one pitch at a time.
We're on to the Ravens.
Yes. Right. Take it one snap at a time. Take it one shift at a time in hockey. That's all it is. It's also very representative of the younger generation of athletes right now who have come up in a generation where mindfulness matters, meditation matters, being grounded. How often do we see players now say things that we would never heard before? Be where your feet are. That's the way they've been raised. We didn't know about any of that stuff growing up. And so the today mantra really fits, I think, the young generation of players today. And then you have the old ones that have come in and said, who cares that we've lost four in a row? It has nothing to do with today. And yes, you're pressing. Yes, when you have a seven-game losing streak. You can't tell me the Orioles weren't pressing the other day to try to score a run or two runs. That's human nature. But I think the teams that handle it best, and you do have to have talent, are the ones that can focus on the moment. And so as much as Q in some ways has sort of simplified and almost made this a little bit boring by design, they've all bought in. And then as far as the job he's done, I just think that he manages the game, builds lineups differently than anybody we've ever seen before. He is willing to think of things outside the box. He is willing to do things differently. He has no issues pinch hitting for someone in the third or fourth inning. It's not as simple as batter versus pitcher in history. There are some nights where I'm like, oh, this guy has great numbers against him and he's not in there. And then you end up seeing him later in a pinch hit. He will line up three lefties or three righties in a row, understanding based on their bullpen that the first chance they get, they're going to bring someone in, and the first chance he gets, he's going to counter that. These are the type of things we saw in the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning. Last night, and this is more modern baseball again, last night the Mets go to Edwin Diaz early, and people are saying, well, who's going to close this thing out? Well, we need to get there first. Right. And they did get there, and they figured it out. Used to be that the closer had to pitch the ninth. We've seen it since they got Lucas Erceg or even others, that if the situation presents itself in the sixth or seventh, he's going to go there and do that. I find it really refreshing that he doesn't just do things the way they've been done before. And, you know, when you do things the way they've been done before and it's set out, this is how you do it, this is when you do it, this is when you bring this guy, this, it's a lot easier to not get criticized. I'm not saying managers do it to not get criticized, but when you do things the way it's expected, there's less pushback. When you do things based on whether it's gut or maybe a philosophy and numbers that we're not aware of, they got all these data analysts now, they've got all this research, they're not going to expose all that to us. But when you're doing something like that, you put yourself out there for more criticism, and I don't think he cares.
How set up do you think they are for the long haul? I don't want to get too far ahead because we've got a game tomorrow in the ALDS.
It's about today, Cody.
Against the Yankees. Well, I don't have to think about today.
No, you don't. Neither do
Just
I.
Just because, like, we talk about that all the time. Someone's like, hey, you can't be talking about how confident you want something. Like, I can.
Well,
they don't. They shouldn't, but I certainly can.
By the way, it's crossed their minds before.
Yes.
I don't think they're thinking about the future today, nor should they be. But you know what? If you don't have the ability to do that, then what are you doing in talk radio?
How sustainable is where they're at right now? Look, so we know Waka could opt out of his deal.
Right.
We know Lugo's here for another year. We know Singer's still under contract, but maybe he's one of the guys they look to move. For the most part, to me, this is the whole analytic thing is why I'm asking is because I think Q is the type of manager that's more in line with what they're doing as an organization. They are more driven in a way that I'm hoping this will be not 2 years of success.
Yeah.
It'll be 10 years of success.
Yeah, it can't be just 2 years of success. And I think there are a few reasons why. First off, if you go back to 14 and 15, which I always say was more than 2 years, you got 2 years of playoffs.
Yeah, 13 was a good year, and honestly, 16 without the injuries,
that's
maybe
right.
They're
and,
better too. But
you know, my wife and I were talking about this yesterday about everything from attendance to just, I feel like there are a lot of people in town this week and last week, well, this week, that are first really starting to pay attention to the Royals. And there are a million reasons for that, right? But I think, I mean, yes, television could be better. Yes, all the losing does it. But think back to, and then I'll get back to where you were, Cody, but I hadn't thought about it like this until yesterday when my wife and I were discussing it. They had, as we know, 56 wins last year and 106 losses. this is like a good lead into a television show. The lead into this season was a 56-106 season.
Yeah.
Why were people even with the moves made in the offseason, the fans had 7 years of non-playoff baseball and then an eighth that was one of the worst in franchise history. So it's really hard to change habits, but you went from 56 to 86. People are suddenly realizing, oh my gosh, we have something really good here. In 2014, they won 86 games in 2013. They fell short, but there was an expectation. So if the expectation on a high note was 500, I don't know. People were slow to come back. I think everybody's waking up to it right now. Now, back to your question, as far as, the future, who was the big superstar in 14 and 15 on that team?
There wasn't one. I think Kane was the best player, but there was no, Kane, it wasn't Bobby Witt.
In hindsight, I think universally everybody says Kane, but.
But there was no.
Hosmer was probably the biggest name.
When you're right. But when we say generational talent, we're talking about, was there a George Brett on that team? No, but there is on this one. And what makes him similar to George Brett, not the skill set, is that we know he's going to be here a long time. We all knew in 14 and 15 that there's a good chance that Hosmer, Moose, Salvi could all, or not Kane. Salvi, Kane, could all leave, and they did. We know that Junior's not going anywhere, so that's a heck of a starting point. And now you can fill those pieces in around them. This isn't three good stars. This is one mega superstar. And now over time, they'll start to sit there and say, who should we extend out? Do you want to extend out Vinny? Do you want to extend out Massey? It's not going to be a mass exodus at the same time. The other piece to this, and they know, they can't just do 2 years and then go back to the bottom. It's not sustainable for what they want to do, what this ownership wants to do. Remember when JJ took over for Dayton Moore and there were some comments about we're going to be more transactional?
Yep.
That's been the case. First off, look at the bullpen, and sometimes, injuries, this and that happen, and that's the case again this year. The only two relievers that are on the playoff roster in the first round that were there on opening day were Angel Serpa and John Schreiber.
And only like 15% or 20% of the opening day roster was there from the year before.
Correct. So I think that they're going to keep changing these guys out. I know for a fact that they would love for Michael Wacha to be back next year. He might have
outpitched it. We'll see.
We'll see. I mean, at his age, he's not going to go get a 5-year contract. The Royals aren't going to give a 5-year contract. But can they find a way to turn that one into two or three or something like that? Fine. But look at where this is stacked up. Take the knowns right now. You mentioned Brady Singer. There's been talk about, would they bring him back? Could they leverage him and move him? I don't know. No one's told me that they're going to trade him, but they certainly have that option. Cole Reagans is here. You know that Seth Lugo's here. So your two Cy Young candidates, who both should finish in the top five, are back next year.
And now you got to choose between Lynch and Bubich and Kyle Wright.
Oh, by the way, Kyle Wright. Yeah. And so it's like you're not going in saying, all right, we need a fourth and a fifth, and, you really need to have 6, 7, and 8. You do have Bubich. You do have Lynch. You do have Kyle Wright. And so and then all these other type of pieces, the Adam Frazier's of the world, if they keep winning – they keep treating people right. I guarantee you that word is getting around baseball that this is a good organization that will spend some money and is going to be competitive. And, oh, by the way, again, let's just frame it differently because we're used to our own guys. Oh, by the way, you have a chance to come play with a 24-year-old Mike Trout.
Yeah, it changes everything. I think fans are have a chance to enjoy Bobby Witt Jr.'s postseason success more because what you said a minute or two ago, which is that we already know he's under a new contract. There's not the, we better enjoy it now, right, Joel, because he might be gone in a year or so.
You're not holding your breath.
No, not at all. We're talking with Joel Goldberg here, having a great time on a Friday, getting set for some postseason baseball tomorrow right here on 96.5 The Fan. When we come back, I want to talk more about what is going to take place tomorrow and ultimately when playoff baseball is back in Kansas City next Wednesday. That's coming up next.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Here on Cody and Gold. Back here on Cody and Gold, we're live out at Community America. There are Olathe location, 135th in Blackbaugh. We had a fun Red Friday tailgate getting set for Chiefs and Saints on Monday night. Thanks so much to those of you that came out. I think we've got a couple more of these planned throughout the football season as well. We got Joel Goldberg, of course, with the Royals joining us. And you're a Community America Credit Union guy, too. I know you got your podcast. You work with them a lot.
Yeah, they're great. Been a member forever. Happy to give my plug here. They do also partner with me on my Round of the Bases podcast. They have nothing to do with that fire truck that is going down Black Bob right
now. They don't know
now.
We're doing live radio right now?
Come on, let's go. But, yeah, great people, highly invested. I know their tagline is invested in you, but highly invested with the Royals and the Chiefs, which I think is great. I mean, you see them all over the place. So great people, love the connection there. And, you know, their CEO, Lisa Ginter, I always say she's like – she's become like a second mom to both Patrick Mahomes and Bobby Witt Jr. So that makes her everything.
We actually met Lisa. We sat in crown seats because of Vinny Pasquantino.
Yeah, she's the best.
Yeah, Bobby, his first time up every game, I think, kind of waves over to her when she's in the crown club.
Trust me, she gets nervous like a mom would, like these are her kids, and they are. So great connection and relationship between all of them. And how fun is it right now to see the Chiefs and the Royals at the same time? I know I'm not the only one. I think this is probably most people, but isn't it bringing us all back to that Monday Night Football game and the wild card?
100%.
And now we get it for more than just a day or two. Monday night is going to be interesting.
It's an epic showcase for the city. And, you know, we've said time and time again, we are all in the golden era of Kansas City sports. Yeah. It's not even close. We're going to look back 30 years from now when who knows where these teams are doing at that point in time. We're going to say, nobody
cherished it even more somehow.
Yeah, I think every once in a while you got to step back a little bit and just kind of smile and laugh about how kind of absurd it is for sports in this town currently.
Doesn't it make you, I know everybody's thought about this too, individually and collectively, but we've gotten to the point now where we realize that we're the Patriots.
Yep.
And so there's like a half a second of me that's like, all right, now I understand that they weren't such bad people. Then I'm like, yes, they are. It's the Patriots.
Vern said we should have more swagger. We should act more like the way that they acted as fans. We should rub it in their face a little bit more.
I think we should just keep doing it. I think we get the opportunity to rub it in their face this way every single time without having to have swagger. One, if you are because all of NFL is national, if you are a fan of a team that is playing the Chiefs, you are going to get a heavy dose during your game at home of Andy Reid commercials, Patrick Mahomes commercials, and Travis Kelce commercials. And then you're going to come back from a commercial break and see Taylor Swift. We don't need to have swagger or wave it in their face. It's already being done for us.
That is very true. And on Wednesday at Kauffman, my guess is Patrick Mahomes and some others are going to be in a suite or two there for the playoff game. I want to talk about that in a second. But you mentioned John Sherman and this ownership group in the last segment. The comment that has stuck with me throughout the back end of this season and now that we see this postseason run, it was when September of, I guess, 2022 it would have been, when he made the comment of, hey, I want to see what it looks like to have a wild card team. Mm. He's got the wild card team. He's now got a team in the divisional series as well. But 2 years later, for them to go open up the checkbook a little bit as well and go out, and these moves don't happen without him. It's one thing for JJ, of course, to sign the right guys, go acquire the right guys, but they also invested.
I think that there is a really nice synergy going on right now between ownership, front office, and coaching staff and what's on the field. I think that the players all really respect and think highly of John Sherman. Sherman thinks highly of them. Sherman loves JJ and Q and on and on. So, you know, there's a lot of harmony right now. And I think that's easy to do, of course, when you're winning. But we also know that there are a lot of places you go where they're winning and there's not harmony. And so it feels to me like everybody's on the same page right now. And I'm really excited. I mean, back to what Cody was talking about before in terms of the future, that it feels like they're just getting started. If you look at the Royals right now, or for that matter, Bobby Witt Jr., Jr. was on another level this year, right? He was on an MVP level. Does anyone seem to think that this is his peak or this
nope.
is his ceiling?
He's 24. No.
He's 24.
He's not even 25 till June.
And maybe this isn't the floor. Maybe the first year, there were a lot of the errors and a lot of the learning, but still very productive. Last year was really impressive. Now he's on another level, and it just feels like we're going to see so much more. And I think that that's the way this team is, too, that in a year they weren't even supposed to make the playoffs, they get in with a really good record, and they'll be, I think, we'll see what they do in the offseason and moves, and if there are any trades or what's going to happen in free agency. I think they'll be one of the favorites to win the division next year.
From an on-field standpoint, what do the Royals have to dodge in the Yankees? I went back, and I watched parts of those Yankees games, too. They won 5-0 in game two. The first game was 10-4. It was not 10-4. It was 4-4 in the seventh. Yep. Stratton and MacArthur both gave up 3 runs each that eventually cost them that game, and then they lost in 11 innings. 4-3 to the Yankees. So it was a very, very competitive series against them. What do they have to avoid against the Yankees in this matchup? I don't want to go back to that earlier matchup. That feels like two different teams a million years
totally
ago.
Agree.
But what are the pitfalls if you're going to lose to the Yankees?
I mean, all right, I totally agree. Forget about what happened earlier in the year. I mean, the run differential, 42-24 on the season, and you're right, a lot of that
was
what happened.
20-0.
That's right. A lot of that would have happened at Kauffman Stadium. I think we all can agree that let's just take the first two games at Yankee Stadium and compare those to the two games the Royals have played in Baltimore. Do we think the Royals will escape having given up only one run in two games? No chance.
No, they got to score more, way more.
So they're going to have to score. Now, they're going to have to do that against a starter tomorrow that is every bit as good, if not better, than Corbin Burns. So we know that they did not light the world on fire against Burns.
No.
Or anybody in that series, for that matter. It will take small ball. I love the way that they won on Tuesday. Walk, stolen base, base hit, right? Pure small ball. They're going to have to hit on those moments. But it's still going to come down to, can you keep Aaron Judge, who they did, can you keep him off the board at Yankee Stadium? He was struggling. He had that career-long homerless streak, which ended right after the Royals left. I think it ended at 15 games, so the Royals caught him towards the end of that. Hard to believe that he's going to stay off the board right now. Maybe the most significant home run by a New York player happened last night.
Alonso,
by the way,
unreal,
magical. I mean,
what a moment.
I don't really care about the Mets. I was rooting for the Brewers.
Same.
Just because of I like the small market.
Same.
All the ties. I'm getting off on a tangent here, but that stopped anyone that was half watching dead in their tracks. He does that chef's kiss, and it was like, oh my God, which is, I know they're at OMG saying, but that was everybody's reaction, whether they were for it or not. Hopefully that doesn't happen with Aaron Judge, but I think you've got to be able to contain Judge and Soto and try to keep this a low-scoring game.
But with Judge, we put it on Trout because he doesn't have any playoff wins, or Shohei, who hasn't really played in the playoffs because, again, he played for the Angels. Aaron Judge has not been a good postseason player.
No.
And he's played in a lot of games. 44, I looked it up. 44 games, he's at .211 with a .308 on-base percentage. He has some home runs. He puts the ball over the fence sometimes, obviously, because he's Aaron Judge. But overall, he hasn't been some, magical postseason hero. I always feel like the home run teams, we always underplay going in there because runs are just harder to get in the postseason, just like in the NFL postseason. Yeah. They're way harder to get. And these home run bopping teams tend to end up like they're used to winning games 7-5, and they can't in the postseason. They have to win 4-3, 5-2, whatever.
So here's some of what I'll give you for at least a little bit of hope. In his career, he has not touched Michael Wacha. So that would certainly be a great way to start things. Here I've got him. His career numbers against Judge versus Wacha. And then I got these from Dave Holtzman. Judge versus Wacha, Reagans, and Lugo.
Okay.
1-for-28 with a single, 4 walks, and 15 strikeouts. I know you could throw all that out. I mean, it's certainly the past. And then, Cody was mentioning the struggles that he had. He was terrible in the postseason in 2022. And, look, I can sit there just as we sat there and said, well, don't worry about what happened earlier in the summer. So, yes, this was 2022. Batted 139. In 9 games with a .306 slugging percentage. The only reason why I think that matters is if you're a big player, any player, but certainly superstar, and if you start getting that reputation as being a guy that doesn't deliver in the postseason, you're going to get asked about that every day. And by the way, they're not going to be
in New York, too. They're going to ask you.
They're not going to be Midwest nice.
The pressure has to be unbelievable.
Why are you struggling in the playoffs? It's going to go right to the point. So, containing Aaron Judge even from the get-go in game one, and Michael Walker might be the right guy to do that, I think sets potentially a tone for the series. But I think you got to keep those guys off. Look, the Royals' offense will start up again. They'll get going again at a certain point. I just think that the odds of that happening against Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon, who the Royals have hit very well before.
Yeah, they
destroyed him last year. And then it was, what's going to give? Because when they saw him last month, it was like, well, was it last year or is it going to be the way he's been going this year? And he was dominant against them.
But also, like, I think the Vinny part of the order, both runs that they, or all three runs they scored, they pitched to Bobby Witt Jr. a couple of times because Vinny is back there. They're afraid of it. And all three of those guys, this is why I think the offense eventually will score. All three of those guys were great with runners in scoring position. We're great RBI guys for this team. I think Ryan Lefevre, who was on the show earlier today, he was complimenting how Vinny will do anything to scratch one run across.
So true.
If it's a sack fly, if it's a ground ball, if it's like whatever you need me to do in order for at least one run to score here, I'll do that. That's why I feel like they're so much better positioned offensively against the Yankees than they were even in the last series, because now Vinny's had three games. He's had a few more days for that wrist to heal. He's had a little bit of a break, and now he's right back in the order. I don't think his wrist will ever be right probably the rest of the postseason. Is
probably
it?
Not.
Or 100%, thumb, yeah. Or thumb, sorry. His thumb will ever be 100% the rest of the way, but it can be better as time goes on.
Well, I think most significantly, I mean, we saw him smoke a home run off of Steven Cruz in live BP at
Yeah, they said
Atlanta.
That was the moment that they're like, okay, he can play.
I saw it, and you could feel and sort of, I'm not saying like all the coaches and front office were gasping, but you could just sort of feel the energy, the excitement, the relief in that. And, I wouldn't say fear, but my only question for the two games in Baltimore was, does Vinny look like himself or close enough to himself? He doesn't need to be 100%. But if the timing is off and things aren't right, then he just becomes another batter. If I'm the other team, and this is to me what Baltimore messed up, I'm going to force Vinny to beat me.
Correct.
And he very well may have, and in some ways he did, right? But I think it's just very encouraging to what Ryan told you guys, very encouraging to see Vinny have the ability to do whatever he needs to do to help his team. One of the many beauties of Vinny is he's not going to get too big and try to hit the home run. He can, but what Vinny's going to do is say, let me just get that out, or that productive out. Let me get that line drive and knock in a run. So he has the ability to do that. Now, left-handed batters at Yankee Stadium, that'll be a choice then for Gerrit Cole, for Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon may prefer to face a Vinny Pasquantino as a lefty versus Bobby Witt Jr., although he may just trust that changeup against sure, the righty Bobby Witt Jr. Personally, if I'm Gerrit Cole, I know he intentionally walked Rafael Devers and that made a whole big thing last month, but if I'm an ace making that kind of money, there's ego that comes with that.
That's what happened with Corbin Burns. He's like, I'm going to get Bobby Witt Jr.
And you know what? If you're Corbin Burns or you're Gerrit Cole and you don't believe that you can get out one of the best players in the game, then you probably shouldn't be in that spot. There should be ego on both sides of that. So before we sit there and say they're not going to pitch to Bobby Witt Jr., they should have belief in Gerrit Cole. And they may not want Vinny proving himself against Baltimore was key, even in just two games. And then that short porch in right field is certainly something that the Yankees may not want to mess with as much. One other thing, too. How much do you guys love Michael Massey batting lead off?
Well, that was what I was going to ask. I was
like
going to say, who else
has
to step up other than the obvious names? Maybe we already had that answer. Maybe the answer is Michael Massey, because it wasn't just at the plate. His glove was tremendous. Ultimately, save the game potentially for them.
And let's take it down to the bottom of the lineup too, and we'll see if Mike Helgar really interesting that they went with the inexperienced and very hot and cold Mikel Garcia this year, a guy that has
paid off game one, didn't game two, but
yeah, but I mean, that's a guy that has more skill than some of the other choices. So do you go with the experience and the calming presence of an Adam Frazier type, or do you go with Mikel? And they went with the player that has the higher upside. And I've said all year long that when Mikel Garcia is on, he's an X factor. We saw that because of the way that he steals bases, because of the success rate that he has. But now remember, Mikel was the kind of the Alcides Escobar, like his cousin for a while, always leading off. Well, you have him batting ninth, and then Massey one. Now you have two leadoff guys that are leading into the big boys. So now you're talking about five batters there. And then I think you need somebody within five, six, seven, eight.
Renfro to me is that guy. I think Renfro's
going to. Renfro or Pham.
Yeah.
Renfro or Pham.
Yeah, I think Renfro potentially sets up there. What do you make
but
of
also Yuli maybe too, just with his experience.
Yeah, you know, but
he's actually been a nice addition.
Mm-hmm. We've got a couple minutes left here. Looking at the weekend, we know the first two in New York, and then they come back to Kansas City on Wednesday. Is it as simple as, you know, hey, get a split?
Yes.
Feeling great heading into Kansas City, where then it sets up where Thursday they would be in a position maybe to even clinch in Kansas City.
Right. And I'm not saying that they're going to get swept in New York. I mean, they just won one of three in New York, could have won two of three. If somehow they can get game one the way they did against Burns.
That changes the whole
game changer. But if you get game two, still a game changer. And then let's take it another step further back to what we talked about earlier in this hour. This team seems to thrive when there are adverse situations. They're very resilient. They're not going to be panicked. They are going to come home to Kauffman Stadium. You both know this. Only Salvador Perez knows this. They're aware of it, but they don't know it because they haven't felt what Kauffman Stadium is going to look
it's
like
gonna
on
be
Wednesday.
Incredible.
And I'm not trying to pump everybody up, because anyone that's listening to this right now
knows.
Unless you are, say, 15 years old, 18 years old, maybe even then you saw it at 5 or 8 years old. I mean, my kid's 21 now, my oldest, and he remembers it at 11
God,
and
if he grew up a Chiefs and Royals fan, ridiculous life.
Oh, he's been
ridiculous life. Nothing but championships.
Totally spoiled, and my daughter's at college up in Chicago at DePaul, and people are so sick of hearing all of her, you know, Chiefs and Taylor Swift, and, like, you know, people don't like her because of it, which I think is amazing. But Kauffman Stadium is going to be rocking, and if for some reason they come home down 2-0, they're going to be okay. And in all likelihood, you'll have Seth Lugo on the hill. Kauffman's going to be rocking. But to come back with one win in your back pocket would be unbelievable.
I would feel good. I can't wait for Wednesday.
Cody's got goosebumps in the sun.
Kauffman playoff baseball is just – I understand there's others. Like, you could get in Baltimore. I could have gone to that Baltimore wildcard game for $20. I got to pay 10 times that.
Yeah, it's $280 right now.
In the building.
Pick your favorite ticket broker. $280 to get in the building with fees right now for Wednesday.
Look, I didn't know what it was going to be like either. The very first playoff game I had ever been to as a Royals fan was the 2014 wild card game. Then it was the ALDS clincher and the ALCS clincher. Those are the other two games I went to in 14. It's just a different atmosphere.
Do you guys have, and I'll tell you mine, I've been mentioning it publicly, because I mentioned it after game one, and then it still worked okay in game two, so I guess I'm all right. Do you guys have any specific superstitions with, you know, playoff baseball?
Nothing specific.
Or that you could talk about?
Yeah, nothing specific. No, because, you know, where we watched the game, the first two there in Baltimore, we were at Jefferson's, and people are like, you know, we got to sit in the same spot. I'll tell you, tomorrow night, I will not be at the same spot, so obviously I'm not too worried about it.
I'll adjust to one on the fly as time goes.
I never do this. I'm as boring as it comes because I'm working, and I'm not saying I think it's stupid. I just can't get held up by it. My wife's like, you're got to go in on this now. I'm like, I'm in. And so we sat together on the couch watching it. If they lost, we would have gone to the basement the next day. And after the fifth inning, I went down to the basement, grabbed some Jay Rieger, Kansas City Monarchs.
There
whiskey.
It is.
Couldn't have the Homestead Grays because they were from the D.C.-ish area for a while. That wouldn't work with Baltimore. Had it. Michael walks, steals a base, and scores. Went back to that again the next day. Didn't maybe feel as good because I'm going back to that.
Whiskey. Jay Rieger whiskey in the fifth. I'm happy to join you on that. They just gave me a bottle, so I might as well.
And support local.
There we go.
Yeah, exactly.
Joel, great to see you, man.
Thanks, fellas.
Enjoy this weekend. Royals baseball, of course, tomorrow night right here on 96.5 The Fan. We're back on Monday. What a day Monday is going to be in KC.